You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
To the casual viewer, Henri Matisse's paintings might look like they were dashed off in a spontaneous frenzy, but as a new exhibit at the Metropolitan Museum of Art reveals, his process was anything but slapdash. New York Times art critic Roberta Smith calls the show one of the most thrillingly instructive exhibitions about this painter, or painting in general, that you may ever see. Matisse, In Search of True Painting, is on view until March 17th. It is accompanied by a handsome catalog, and I'm very pleased to welcome Rebecca Rabideau to our studio. She is the show's curator and co-author of the catalog. Hi.
Hi. Thank you so much for inviting me over.
What got you thinking about putting the show together? There have been so many Matisse shows.
There have been a number of Matisse shows, and so I was very careful, and I've admired them, I should say, and so I was very careful. If we were going to put art at risk by borrowing it, there had to be a real reason. And for me, my thinking about this theme grew out of a show that I did last year called The Steins Collect. It was a look at Gertrude Stein and her brother Leo and Michael, their collection, their interaction with artists in the first two decades in Paris, Matisse and Picasso before they were household names. And it was actually Sarah Stein, Gertrude Stein's sister-in-law, who had a very interesting relationship with Matisse. He very much admired her intellect and her eye, and early on spoke with her about some of his painting process. And she actually owned two of the paintings that are in the current exhibition, the Matisse Show on View at the Met. And I realized at looking at them, he would often paint the same image twice. He would take canvases of the same dimension, paint the same composition in different ways. He was trying to explore what would happen if he juxtaposed certain colors or tried to capture light in a different way. And what became very clear to us as we worked on this show was that Matisse used repeated imagery to push himself. And he used it not only during this early period when he was close to Sarah Stein, but really throughout his life in a number of different ways. So in answer to your question, this exhibition very much grew out of my work on the Steins Collect, but where that was a broad view, this is really a close, in-depth look at one aspect of his painting process.
And it includes many famous paintings, but when you see them paired off with others, or sometimes in a group of three, it gives us a whole new idea of what that painting is all about.
Right. So this show.
So did you see this as educational as much as just an exhibit of great paintings?
It was never intended to be an exhibit of great paintings. I'll tell you that. It was really a look at this part of his process, and some of the paintings are well known and some have been hidden away in private collections. We have a work from the Hiroshima Museum in Japan that's never before been exhibited in the United States. So in that sense, it's a real mix, but it's really about looking. It's an exhibition about looking, and what has been so really wonderful for me is that it seems to have very much appealed to creative people, to writers and choreographers and artists, of course, because you see Matisse keep pushing himself and keep working on something, and that already is difficult enough to do, but he also knew when to stop, which I think is even harder. And we make that explicit in the paintings, but also later on where there are a series of photographs of his work on individual canvases.
Well, the viewer isn't always sure whether he started off with the more detailed version and then simplified more and more, or whether he might have started off with something a little simpler and then decided to add things.
I think that's part of what's so interesting. This isn't an exhibition. There's no formula for Matisse. Sometimes he started off with something that might seem to us very, very modern, and then another version became a more traditional, and sometimes it's the other way around.
Was this something he learned during his academic training when he copied old master paintings at the Louvre?
That was certainly part of it. Matisse came to painting later than some of his peers. He was actually working as a notary's clerk in northeastern France.
And it was when he got sick.
He became ill. His mother gave him some art supplies, and he realized he wanted to do something else with his life. So he was always feeling a little bit in need of pushing himself in that respect. Not only was he copying old master paintings, but he was also going to the art galleries in Paris and seeing the contemporary art. And so we start off the show with two paintings. Everything in the show is by Matisse. Two paintings by Matisse in which he's looking at Cézanne and he's looking at Signac, who were two up-and-coming artists at the turn of the century. And what Matisse does is he arranges a still life, and then he paints it once in the style of each artist. Does he fully understand those artist theories? No. But he's trying to understand formally, if he paints it in their styles, what does that create? What does it mean?
Well, in the early years, we see the influence of those artists, and Gauguin, obviously, when he gets into Fauvism. At the beginning, he was very willing to be influenced.
Absolutely.
Then later, we suddenly find Matisse, and he becomes the influence.
Well, you know, he received a lot of harsh criticism around 1905. There was a painting he made called Luke's Common Volupté. And the critics said, you know, Matisse is such a chameleon. He's taking influences from all sorts of people. Who is he? Where is his personality? And then with what became known as Fauvism in 1905, that's really Matisse absorbing everything. But this is an artist who was very aware that he needed to always look around him. He looked at non-Western art. He looked at the art of the Italian primitives, 14th and 15th century. Throughout his life, he was going to North Africa. He never stopped receiving external influences. And I think that's important for all creative people.
And it's interesting that we just followed a segment on jazz, and his last series was called Jazz.
Well,
the show opens with two versions of a still life, one with compote and fruit, the other with compote, apples, and oranges, both from 1899 early works. As listeners who check out the slideshow on our show page will note, one is richly painted with lots of texture and modeling. The other is much simpler. By the way, we have 16 images on our slideshow on our show page.
That's wonderful.
The Met for allowing us to do that. Do we know which one he painted first?
That's an instance where we do not know which one he painted first. And then there's also that third possibility that he painted them at the same time, perhaps going from one to another. You know, there's sometimes now that more and more archives are becoming available, we can go to the letters in which he's writing either to his wife or to artists like Renoir. We've been able to identify chronologies for certain of these groups of paintings, and others remain a mystery.
My guest is Rebecca Rabineau, who is the curator responsible for Matisse in Search of True Painting, now on view at the Metropolitan Museum of Art until March 17th, also co-author of a very beautiful catalog. There's also a pair of portraits, Young Sailor 1 and 2 from 1906, and they're also in our slideshow. Again, one is more detailed, the other almost flat. What was he trying to figure out in those pairs?
Well, he painted those two paintings down in Collioure, which was a tiny fishing village in southwest France near the Spanish border. And he painted one. It shows a teenager who lived next door in what is known as Matisse's traditional Fauve style. It's brightly colored strokes of color, brightly colored strokes of paint. And then what he did is he took a canvas the same size, and he no longer had the boy in front of him. He used that first painting as his model, and he simplified it. And I think really what he was interested in was this idea of reducing a composition to its essence. And you find in the Parisian avant-garde at that moment, musicians, philosophers, and artists, they were all interested in reducing to the essence.
And didn't he do that with drawings as well? We see a drawing that looks fairly realistic, and then a series of simpler and simpler and simpler versions of it until he has found just the essence in a few lines.
Absolutely. You see it across all media with Matisse, and sometimes it's not as straight a trajectory as that. Sometimes it will start to become more simpler and then become more complex. So, you know, I would caution everyone who's looking at these to really look at the nuances. There's a painting in our show called The Large Blue Dress, which is owned by the Philadelphia Museum of Art. And we have a series of 10 photographs that were taken as Matisse worked on the canvas. And you see that it starts out more naturalistic. It becomes simpler, but then he starts making it more complicated again. It's a very interesting process to watch.
And those photographs were done because Matisse wanted to document his process?
He did. Starting in the early 1930s, he hired a photographer to come and take photographs of his most important paintings, not regularly. The visits weren't scheduled every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, but when Matisse felt he had reached a state he wanted to preserve. So as we thought about this exhibition, we realized that this is part of that continuum that we see early on, as in Young Sailor, when he paints the two paintings and he compares them. Now he actually used those photographs as he painted. to see if he was moving further away or closer to his end goal.
And he exhibited the photographs along with the paintings.
Only later, in 1945. So I think it was a very personal thing for him early on. But after World War II, he had been through a great deal personally. His health, he had had a horrible operation from which he almost died. And
his wife had been arrested and his daughter?
His daughter had been arrested by the Gestapo and tortured horribly. It had been a very, very difficult time for him. And I think he realized he wanted to share his process with his public, especially with those young artists who were making these very easy Matisse-like paintings. And he wanted to say, it took a lifetime to achieve this.
So other people were not using this kind of process. I suspect he was also proud of the fact that he had developed a personal approach to coming up with what he thought might be the best painting.
I would disagree. I think that probably many, many artists, in fact, it would be hard to name one who doesn't use repeated imagery in some way. But what Matisse did...
Yeah, first draft, second draft.
Right. And what Matisse did that was different is first he turned this academic hierarchy on end that valued that sketchy or first painting more than the second. For Matisse, sometimes he valued that first one more. And by showing these photographs in 1945... he was the first person to do that, to use photography proudly to show how it influenced his work.
Now, you mentioned the blue dress. You actually have the blue dress.
We have the blue dress. It has never before been publicly exhibited. It had been packed into a trunk by Lydia Delektorskaya, who is the model who made it and wore it. And what's fascinating about it is actually not a dress at all. It's a blouse and a skirt. And the skirt has a ruffle that creates the impression or illusion of an overskirt. And the way he painted it, it looks as if the ruffle would be white, but in fact it's the blue silk with little white cotton lace edging. And it's fascinating once you see the skirt to look at the photographs and watch how he paints the ruffle until he reaches the final result in the painting.
There are two drastically different views of Notre Dame Cathedral, which he could see from his window when he was painting. They're both painted in 1914. One is almost all blue, very abstract. It's in your collection?
MoMA's
collection, and one of my favorite paintings. The other one is more colorful and detailed, sketchily painted. What do you think he was trying to figure out here? Because the first one, the one in the MoMA collection, looks like he was actually trying to move toward total abstraction. I guess that's about as close as he ever came to non-representational work. But was he flirting with it?
I have seen those paintings exhibited in different ways, and the way we have them in our show, they're actually on a wall with two other views of Notre Dame, an early view from 1900 from the Tate, a view from 1902, which is in a private collection. And seeing those together, to me, gives a completely different view. He had a studio overlooking Notre Dame, and he painted throughout the period in which he had this studio the view of Notre Dame, but he brings it all the way back to himself. And what I find so interesting about the two paintings in the context of the show, if you look at them very closely on the right side, each of those pictures has a vertical line that represents the edge of his window, the edge of his building. And so one thing, it makes it look a little unfinished. You're not quite sure what's going on. Both of those paintings, for me, are about Matisse wrestling with the idea of what constitutes a finished painting. And he approaches it in two very different ways in those. One is perhaps more impressionistic and more sketchy, as you say. The other, perhaps more abstract. And yet, you see him really looking at some of the very same issues in both of them. They're on canvases that are the same size. They were painted in 1914 at the exact same time. They're a fascinating pair.
Do you think that he intended for both of them to be exhibited? Because, for example, sometimes he just seems to be trying things out. There's a series of the beach at Entretat, each with a different kind of fish.
Mm-hmm. So that trio is very unusual, and Matisse scholars hadn't really understood it, and I actually think I cracked the mystery on that. Those three paintings were made in 1920 when he went to Etretat on the Normandy coast. His daughter, whose trachea was collapsing, they thought she was going to die. She had just had an operation, which was successful, and the doctors recommend that she recover in the sea air. So he brought her up to up to the Normandy coast. And when he made these three pictures, he was aware of the 19th century artists who had been to Etretat before him, Courbet and Monet. And those pictures, if you look at the top half, show the very unusual cliff formations in Etretat, and the bottom half are still lives of fish. I think those were painted in homage to Renoir, an artist with whom Matisse had become very, very close. And Renoir had passed away only a few months before. Matisse was one of the few people who was allowed to go into Renoir's studio after he died. And there he saw more than a dozen still lifes of fish that Renoir had painted. So I think those three paintings are about Matisse positioning himself as the next great French artist of the 19th century. And I should point out that the eel, which is the most modern of those pictures, was first exhibited in America in 1921, the year after it was painted, at the Met. And people found it so modern that someone actually wrote into a local newspaper saying that he refused to come back into New York City until it was taken off the wall.
There are those a lot of paintings of the model, his model, Lorette. Like Renoir, he had favorite models.
He met Lorette in the fall of 1916, and up until this point, he was often painting pairs of compositions, and she broke that mold. He was inspired to paint more than 50 paintings of her in a six-month period.
Now, you were able to duplicate the photo exhibit that Matisse put together. Are they all in one collection?
Those photographs are reproductions based on the original negatives. The reproductions were made for the presentation of this exhibition in Copenhagen and in New York.
Because this is the third place it's been shown,
yes,
Paris and
yes.
Copenhagen? Is it going to travel somewhere else?
No, it ends here. It's very difficult to borrow Matisse paintings. Nobody wants to let them out of their sight.
I assume you had a wish list. How close to the wish list did you wind up getting?
Remarkably, we were very close. There's only one painting that I hoped to get that we couldn't, and it is it's called Nasturtiums with a Painting Dance 2 from the Pushkin Museum in Russia. It's the pair to a painting in the Met's own collection, but as you know, Russian museums are not lending to America these days. So even though we went there and spent a few days with their conservator and curator, the government won't allow loans.
And never asked to adopt a painting from Russia either these days. But I suspect that in many cases the Met owned one of the paintings and thought about pairing something that he had also done.
In certain cases, the Met owned pictures, the Staatens Museum as well, Pompidou. I mean, it made sense that we were all partners on this exhibition.
Well, thank you so much for talking about it. It's an amazing exhibition, and there's a gorgeous catalog published by the Metropolitan Museum of Art, Matisse in Search of True Painting. It is on view until March 17th, and it's not only a wonderful exhibit if you love art, but also a wonderful exhibit if you want to understand how artists work. And my great thanks to the curator and co-author of the catalog, Rebecca Rabineau, for being our guest today.
Well, thank you so much.